to welcome students from Monroe High School. Would they please stand? Good seeing you. Thank you for coming. You may be seated. The students are here with a program entitled Court with Class, cleverly entitled Court with Class. And this program is sponsored by the State Bar and the Supreme Court. We invite students across the state to come and join us for an oral argument. If the students arrive, then we will have them hear the oral argument. They will then meet with the justice who was assigned for the day to meet with the students at lunchtime after this second oral argument. I keep talking about meeting with the students, but this is a meeting open to anyone who wishes to attend, including counsel. The discussion will be on the procedures of the court, not the substantive issues of the case before us. If anyone would like a copy of a summary of the facts and legal issues in this case, if you raise your hand, the marshal will give it to you. Hearing none, let me introduce the court to you all. On the far end is an empty chair, and I've been advised that Justice Ziegler has left. Is she coming back, or don't we know?
She has a personal emergency. She will not be present during argument, Chief Justice.
For the entire day. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay,
that
fine.
Is correct.
All right. Any arrangements made for coming to the conference on these cases? Okay, would you check on that? Good. Next to the empty chair is Justice Prosser. Justice Prosser is the justice with whom you'll meet at lunch. Seated next to me is, to my right, is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate left is Justice Patrick Crooks, and to his left, Justice Patience Robensack, and on the far left, Justice Michael Gableman. With those introductions made, I will call our second case today, which is 2013-AP-1581-CR, State versus, is it Houghton? Houghton? Pardon me? Houghton. Okay. State versus Richard E. Houghton, Jr. Arguing on behalf of the state of Wisconsin is Assistant Attorney General Tiffany M. Winter. She will have 25 minutes for argument. Andrew Walter, representing Richard E. Houghton, will have 30 minutes to argue, and then Ms. Winter has 5 minutes in rebuttal. Ms. Winter, you may proceed.
May it please the Court. As the Chief Justice stated, my name is Tiffany Winter, and I am the Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Wisconsin in this matter. This case asks this court to address whether a traffic stop was reasonable under the Fourth Amendment. The Court of Appeals concluded that the stop at issue was not reasonable because it was not based on probable cause that a traffic violation had occurred. The state is asking this court to reverse the Court of Appeals on any of the three grounds. First, the Court of Appeals erred when it determined that the officer did not have probable cause of a traffic violation, specifically a violation of Wisconsin's windshield obstruction statute.
Of what?
The windshield obstruction statute.
Windshield, okay.
Second, that if the officer did not have probable cause, he minimally had a reasonable suspicion in order to stop Mr. Houghton's vehicle for a violation of the same statute. And finally, if the officer did not have probable cause or reasonable suspicion to form that the statute was being violated under the court's interpretation of that specific statute, the stop was still lawful because based on the observations of the officer, it was objectively reasonable for the officer to believe that a violation had occurred. The third issue asks this court to adopt the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Fourth Amendment as stated in the Hyen decision. All issues require the court to address the statute regarding windshield obstructions, which is Wisconsin Statute Section 346-88-3B. That statute states that no person shall drive any motor vehicle upon a highway with any object so placed or suspended in or upon the vehicle so as to obstruct the driver's clear view through the front windshield. Mr. Houghton's vehicle was stopped in this case because he was driving a vehicle with a GPS device that measured 3 inches by 5 inches in the driver's field of vision and also had a pine tree-shaped air freshener, which measured 6 inches by 3 inches, hanging from his rear view mirror. The officer testified that he stopped.
Oh, how big is the windshield?
The total size of the windshield, I'm not for sure. I know he was driving an older vehicle car, or older model car. I believe it was a larger vehicle.
Let me put my question this way.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the state's position that anything on the, anything near the windshield or on that deck of the car at the windshield violates the statute? And is it the position of the state that anything hanging from the rear window, a rear view mirror, violates the statute? Or is it the state's position that you have to look at the whole windshield and the particular obstructions, in quotes, and make a calculation or make a decision? What's the state's position about the interpretation of this statute?
The first, that any obstruction would be a violation of the statute.
A rosary?
Yes. A rosary is a very emotionally charged item. I was warned that I would probably get that hypothetical or question from the court.
I was saying Christopher Miller. I mean, you know, really, even a rosary hanging, you're taking the position that can't be. That's illegal.
I believe the way that the statute is written, and if we look just at the plain language, there's no exception within the statute for a level of obstruction. Wisconsin did not enact a material or substantial obstruction statute. It did not enact a statute that was limited, that the driver had to have a clear view of only the highway in front of him. The statute is specific that it cannot obstruct the driver's clear view through the front windshield. And under the plain language of the statute, that would mean that anything that is in between the driver and the windshield that would be in the driver's field of vision at any point and looking through that windshield would violate the statute.
You're saying that anything hanging from the rear view mirror as a matter of law would violate the statute?
Yes.
Even if it doesn't visually obstruct.
The best example of that is a piece of string.
Okay, a piece of string. Even though it doesn't visually obstruct, nevertheless, it's a violation.
Like a piece of fishing wire?
Yeah.
Something like that. That's like a piece of fishing line that's fairly clear and fairly thin. Is that what you're asking?
Or the piece of metal that holds the rosary.
It would have to be something that would actually limit the driver's view through the windshield.
So then you get, and that's what I thought, where you were headed, I thought anyway.
So
it really isn't a matter of law, anything then. It's anything that will obstruct.
Yes.
But disagree with me if I'm saying it wrong.
No, anything that would obstruct the driver's clear view through the front windshield. The difference between the state's interpretation and Mr. Houghton's interpretation is that it has to obstruct the driver's field of vision, their immediate field of vision, or what they would normally use while driving. And I think the circuit court used the example of, well, is it in the windshield wiper space? And the state disagrees with that interpretation because the statute doesn't limit it to a specific area of the windshield that the obstruction must be placed with.
But isn't it then a matter of relativity as to whether or not an item hanging actually obstructs? And to what degree?
The state's position that any opaque item that was in between the driver and the windshield so that the driver would have to look through the item and cannot then look through that portion of the windshield would be an obstruction under the statute.
Let me just...
Mayor, let me ask you this. A number of us park around the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
We have a sticker on our windshield that is required to be permanently in place by the Capitol Police.
Mm-hmm.
Is it your position that that's a violation of the statute?
No, because there's a specific exemption for that, and that exemption can be found within the Section 3A. And it says, certificates or stickers issued by order of a government agency do not violate the statute.
But I'm relieved.
You're fine. Put it in the wrong place because they changed it to the rear of the car.
When did they do that?
So you've got to know the law.
I'll probably get a ticket.
I'm sorry, what?
That's okay. I wait till they're finished. Is Wisconsin Statute 346-88-3B, mm-hmm. the one you're looking at, is that ambiguous?
So the state's taking two positions on this. One is that the plain language is clear, and it's not ambiguous, and that the Court of Appeals simply erred. However, other courts that have addressed similar statutes in different states have found that because the statute is so expansive, they're going to limit it. Not that they found the language to be ambiguous, but that the application of the statute to be overly broad. And so they read the statute to mean something else. In those particular circumstances, if that's what the court wishes to do today, to read the statute to mean something than just the clear view through the front windshield because of the application and the impacts of that application.
Well, if I look at the words clear view, that's where I would focus my concern if I'm interpreting the statute. What mm-hmm. does clear view mean? It may mean something to one person and something else to another. If both people are reasonably well informed, then you have a circumstance where the statute is ambiguous, at least under our case law. So I was kind of asking you about the terms in the statute and what is the state's position on that.
Our main position is that clear view means just what it sounds like, the normal standard, what anybody would think clear view means, which means that you can clearly view through the windshield. So any opaque item would obstruct the clear view. And to some extent, non-opaque items, depending on their transparency, depending on the transparency of the item, may also obstruct it. Because the view has to be clear through the windshield. And that interpretation is supported by reading the statute together, specifically Section A. If there was no need to consider small or minor obstructions, there would have been no need for the legislature to specifically exempt stickers issued by a government agency from that obstruction statute. Similarly, in Section A, which talks about what can be placed on the glass instead of what can be suspended or otherwise interfere, there's no mention that it has to be a material obstruction, just that nothing that is not transparent can be placed on the glass itself.
Counsel, I'm holding a pen about, 16 inches from my face.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, would that indicate that I don't have a clear view of you?
I would agree because I don't have a clear view of you. Part of your face is obstructed by the pen in front of your face. And I think that's a good visual example. If you think about the GPS device, which was 3x5 or a standard index card, and you place that somewhere, and you think about how much that limits what you can see immediately in front of you, and then take it to a perspective as well. Because when you're driving, you're not focused on what's immediately outside of the windshield, mm-hmm. but what that obstruction actually obstructs through the entire field, the distance that you must be able to see. So a small, relatively small obstruction can become relatively major in that context.
Counsel, you have already ably addressed the issue of government-issued stickers. It is not uncommon for service stations, automobile service stations, mm-hmm. to place stickers on, typically on the upper left-hand side or the driver's side, indicating the last oil change and when the oil change is due. Is there an exception for that, or does the state have a position on it?
There is no exception for that, and the state has contemplated that. There, I think, from my experience, a lot of those stickers are transparent in nature, and only the writing is non-transparent on them. But I believe that under the plain language of the statute, that would be an obstruction, and that would be under Section A, not under Section B, because Section A deals with what you place on the glass. Section B deals with whatever is suspended from the glass or from the vehicle.
Just as your former answer has put to rest the mind of Justice Crooks, your latter answer now strikes some alarm to me, and I'll have to figure out where the sticker placed by the dealership needs to go.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a drive-through pass, you know, if you go to Chicago, which I go to often because my family is down there, and it's a plastic thing that you put really behind your rearview mirror,
mm-hmm.
but on the glass.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was some reason you need to look around your rearview mirror, you certainly would see it there. Is that precluded by the statute? So now we all have to take our drive-through passes off of the car and just kind of hold it as we go by and not have it on our car affixed?
We also contemplated that question.
I
believe that the instructions for the iPass, and please correct me if I'm wrong because I do not have one, do tell you to place it behind the rearview mirror.
That's right, they do.
Yes.
But you can, if you needed to look around your rearview mirror, you're going to see it. I mean,
yes.
That's how you got it stuck there to begin with.
And a rearview mirror is a required piece of equipment under Wisconsin's administrative code, which would obstruct the view. So I believe by placing the iPass behind the mirror, as you are instructed to by the state of Illinois, that is not actually obstructing the view because it is behind an already opaque object. You could also argue that is issued by a government agency and therefore is exempted under Section A.
Counsel, how does your argument tie into the Hyen decision of the U.S. Supreme Court? In other words, my understanding is that relates to mistake of law.
Mm-hmm.
How does your argument here today tie into that? Because you specifically mentioned that.
Yes. If this court determines that the state's interpretation of the obstruction statute is incorrect, the court under Hyen, if you are to adopt Hyen, the next question would be, was it objectively reasonable for the officer, based on what he had observed on Houghton's vehicle, to suspect that Houghton was violating the law, even though it turns out that the statute means something else? And so that's how Hyen turns in. And that's why I said at the beginning, we have to start with the statute, because whether we're going to talk about probable cause, reasonable suspicion, or mistake of law, it all must begin with the statute. And the Hyen court was clear that a mistake of law will never be found to be objectively reasonable unless there is some hard interpretive work that must be done to determine what the statute means. And so if the statute is not clear, if it is ambiguous, and we need to determine what clear view actually means, and it doesn't mean any view through the front windshield but something else, then we have to determine whether it was reasonable for the officer to believe that the statute did mean any obstruction, that the observations of what was in the windshield was a violation of that statute.
Well, if we take your view that this is an unambiguous, clear, nothing goes
mm-hmm.
view, you never get to Hyman.
That is correct.
Because the end of the case is clear, unambiguous, so it's not a question of the reasonably objective view of the police officer.
That is absolutely correct.
Let's just double back. I do have a sticker on my car showing the last time the oil was changed, mm-hmm. and it is not transparent.
Okay.
It's plastic, but it has lots of writing on it. It's not transparent. It's on the windshield. It's not behind the rear view mirror or any other equipment on the windshield. So can the police officer now stop my car because he/she has probable cause to believe that I am violating a statute, right? Probable cause to stop my car and give me a ticket, right?
Correct.
Is that a Terry stop?
That's the state's second argument, that it should be classified as a Terry stop.
That's why I want to get to that, too.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got a probable cause stop, right?
Correct.
And what can the officer do in a probable cause stop? They've stopped me, mm-hmm. and the officer thinks I'm very nervous. And don't seem to be able to answer questions that he has. And so he thinks that I'm too nervous and I'm probably taking drugs to Minneapolis. Okay? I'm a perfect foil. I don't look like your usual drug courier. Right?
It's true.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's really perfect. How long can he keep me?
Well, on the facts as you gave them, I don't think there would be reasonable suspicion to extend that stop just if you were acting nervous. The probable cause standard allows the officer to arrest you for the violation if it's a violation that you can arrest for. It allows them to issue you the citation. It allows them to do investigatory questions, to run warrant checks.
They bring out the drug dogs because I have an air freshener, but it's in the car, but it's not obstructing my view. And the air fresheners are used, one of their uses is to mask drugs.
Sure. I think under the most recent slip opinion in Rodriguez versus United States that they could run the drug dogs as long as it was not extending the scope of the traffic stop.
Counsel, I think your argument may border on the overbroad because of this.
Mm-hmm.
You are making, you and the AG's office that you represent,
mm-hmm.
are making law violators of probably tens of thousands of people in this state.
Sure.
Well, you know, I just don't know if that's what the Attorney General's office should be doing. And I may be underestimating. It may be hundreds of thousands, because I, too, have an oil sticker on the upper left of my windshield that is white. I can't see through it. It's white and has writing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you there are people in Eau Claire and La Crosse and Rhinelander and Appleton and Oshkosh and places in between that you're saying are violating the law. That just doesn't seem like something the Attorney General's office should be doing.
Not only that, you're saying that they can arrest them and that they can search incident to an arrest and bring out the dogs and...
It's
open season on the cars.
I completely acknowledged how broad the state's reading was in the brief. I even gave the example that almost zillions, hundreds, thousands are subject to ballot traffic stops regardless of the state's reading of this particular statute. There are traffic violations that are committed on a regular basis, speeding. A speed limit is a speed limit. But multiple people go 2 miles over, 3 miles, 4 miles, 5 miles. Those are technically violations that they can stop for. The fact that almost everybody does it almost every single day does not mean that it's not a violation of the law.
No, but that's a kind of a non-responsive, I think, in terms of people who speed. They know they're speeding. They know they're going 5 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
You think the people in La Crosse tomorrow or today know that the Attorney General's office thinks that they're law violators because they have an oil sticker up there?
That's not the question, because ignorance of the law has never been an excuse. The question is, do they know that they have something placed upon or within the view of their windshield that is obstructing their view? That's the valid question. And the fact that there are zillions of people subject to traffic stops does not change whether or not an officer can stop them for a violation. But I want to make clear that the state has alternative arguments, that it is not saying that the only way to reverse the Court of Appeals is to determine that the language of the statute is unambiguous and that it means any obstruction is a violation. Even if this court was to determine that because it is so expansive, which I believe a court in Virginia it was on similar language made a similar determination. It's just too expansive, and that's not what the legislature could have meant because it subjects almost everybody to a traffic stop. If we make that determination, then we have to ask additional questions. Well, if not all items amount to a violation of the statute, would what the officer observed amount to enough to suspect that there may have been a violation so that he would have to investigate that? Meaning, did the court err when it determined that the officer had to have probable cause of a violation instead of reasonable suspicion to stop Mr. Houghton's vehicle? And the state's position on that is yes. And further, the state argues that reasonable suspicion is the standard, the minimum standard for a traffic stop, and that Wisconsin should clarify and do away with the dichotomy that was pronounced in Longcore, that there's two different types of standards for a traffic stop, a probable cause standard and a reasonable suspicion standard.
That's dark in Longcore, this concept of two different standards, is that where it started, or has it been longstanding? As I read the briefs, it's longstanding.
It started after Wren in 1996, and I think Longcore was decided in 1999. And I think Longcore was the official, I believe, adoption on the per curiam decision from this court, of the Court of Appeals decision that probable cause is required for non-investigatable offenses.
Looking a little bit further at the definitions of reasonable suspicion and probable cause, just say we were to conclude that the air freshener is not a violation of the statute.
Mm-hmm.
So the officer would have been wrong on a question of law
mm-hmm.
when he stopped for that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the passage by which we would decide whether an error of law is sufficient to support a stop based on reasonable suspicion, which also occurs in Longcore, also occurred in Brown, and also occurred most recently in Hine?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So if the determination is that there was no violation, if we are to adopt the Hine court's interpretation of the Fourth Amendment and overrule Longcore and modify Brown, the next question has to be whether what the officer observed, was it objectively reasonable for him to believe that a violation had occurred before this court's interpretation of that statute? And I think the answer to that question has to be yes, because the statute does say that it's the clear view that has to be obstructed through the front windshield. The officer testified that the GPS device was within Houghton's view. The circuit court made that finding a fact. The GPS device is an opaque item, and so it would be reasonable for the officer to believe that Houghton was violating the law. And because it was reasonable, then that stop was lawful. That's further supported by a previous interpretation of the Court of Appeals of the statute. Well, they actually didn't interpret the statute. They stated that a very large air freshener is a violation of that statute, which would support the officer had a reasonable interpretation of believing that an air freshener and a GPS device were a violation. I see my red light is on.
Oh, counsel, I appreciate your red light is on, but I'm not quite sure where we're at the end of this argument. So tell me, as briefly as you can,
mm-hmm.
how would you write this opinion?
I would write the opinion and it's a hard question. I would write the opinion stating that the statute is arguably ambiguous because...
I'm sorry, the statute is what?
Arguably ambiguous.
Arguably
ambiguous.
This is after your whole argument that it's...
To the first one, but remember the state has three arguments.
Okay. So it's arguably ambiguous.
Ambiguous. Because it does subject almost every vehicle in Wisconsin to a traffic stop for a relatively minor violation under...
Test for ambiguity?
No, she concluded that, I think.
Okay,
not
go ahead.
Not the test, no. I'm just talking about the conclusion.
I want to know how the state thinks this.
I missed something. I didn't understand how you hooked the two up, but that's fine.
Okay. And because the statute is ambiguous, the officer had reasonable suspicion to believe that a violation had occurred because he observed objects that were in Houghton's field of vision that he believed would limit Houghton's view through the front windshield. And the fact that the officer was mistaken that the law required no obstruction to the front windshield was objectively reasonable because of the statute's language that the clear view cannot be obstructed through the front windshield. That was a relatively complex, because there's three levels here that the court would have to get through in order to get to adopting Hine. But ultimately, the state requests that the court adopt the Hine interpretation and find that a mistake of law is not fatal to the analysis of whether a traffic stop was reasonable under the Fourth Amendment.
Counsel, I'm not sure in the second step of what you said that it is a mistake of law or a mistake of fact. Because it is ambiguous, the officer had reasonable suspicion to believe what he thought would obstruct, And so maybe it would obstruct, maybe it wouldn't obstruct, but he had reasonable suspicion to believe that it would obstruct. That sounds to me more like a mistake of fact, or potentially a mistake of fact, as opposed to a question of law. What do you think about that?
Mistake of fact and mistake of law are a very fine line, and I think it's recognized by the Hine decision. If the court determines that the statute, it's all going to come down to whatever the court's interpretation of what clear view means in the statute. And if that interpretation would allow for reasonable suspicion based on the objects that were observed in Houghton's vehicle, then the analysis can end there. If that interpretation would not support reasonable suspicion or probable cause to believe that Houghton's vehicle was violating the statute, the next step, if this court is to adopt Hine, is to determine whether the officer's belief that there was a violation was objectively reasonable because he did not have the benefit of the interpretation of the statute. So that's how it comes down.
Now, does that interpretation of the statute have to follow through in all cases, or once the court says that, he made a mistake, he thought he has to gauge the obstruction, right?
Mm-hmm.
We say, no, you didn't have to gauge the obstruction. So where does that leave you?
If you say you do not have to gauge the obstruction,
any obstruction is out.
Then the court can, if it chooses to, end its analysis there and reverse the Court of Appeals decision because the officer would have had probable cause to stop Houghton's vehicle based on his observations.
You don't want us to do that because you want us to reach the Hine case.
We would prefer you to reach Hine, yes.
Okay. I just want to clarify that.
Do you want to talk about the license issue at all?
I think it's helpful in the mistake of law analysis to talk about the front license plate issue. And the state, I think, and Mr. Houghton disagreed on which mistake of law may be considered reasonable and which one may not. The state's position is that the mistake regarding the front license plate cannot be objectively reasonable. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The statute is clear that not all vehicles require a front license plate. Only those vehicles that are issued to plates require a front license plate. But more importantly, that statute was previously interpreted, and it was determined that the officer could not stop a Michigan vehicle for a front license plate. Because the statute was previously interpreted, there's no ambiguity. The officer's mistake as to that statute cannot be objectively reasonable.
Where was the police officer's car when the officer first noticed that there was no front license plate?
Mr. Houghton's vehicle was coming at the police officer's car, so they were meeting this way, and the officer turned around to initiate the stop, to follow the vehicle.
Okay. So the officer, at least at first, had no idea whether this was a car from Wisconsin or a car from Michigan or, mm-hmm. or a car from some state that doesn't require a front license plate.
Mm-hmm.
And as the officer was approaching that car, that's when he observed the GPS and the air freshener?
Yes.
Okay. And having turned around and is behind the car, he would have noticed that there was a Michigan license plate. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Now, you are not really taking the position that a little sticker that says you've got to get your oil changed for 5,000 or 3,000 miles at such and such a thing, way up in the left-hand upper corner of the windshield is going to be justification for stopping the vehicle. You're not taking that position, are you?
I think if the courts define that the statute is unambiguous, that's the position that the court...
Well, it might obstruct your clear view if you're looking for an airplane.
Well, there is other potential circumstances in which your clear view could be obstructed. For example, if you're on a freeway and there's cars that are entering from an on-ramp that starts overhead, you do look through the top portion of your windshield. You may not be able to see the blinker of the car. A similar type of obstruction was analyzed in the Mason decision, which I believe is out of, Virginia as well. And that was a parking placard issued by an employer, and it hung just a little bit below the rearview mirror, so it attached to the rearview mirror and hung slightly below the rearview mirror. And the court determined that under the language of the statute, it's not limited what the individual has to have a clear view of. And just because you don't, on a regular basis, look through a particular part of a windshield does not mean that that part of the windshield is unnecessary for the driver to look through in all circumstances. And because of the fact that we are attempting to ensure safety on our roadways through these regulations, that it makes sense that we are not limiting what type of instructions that you have to have. Because I believe the court noted every circuit court in the state at some point has heard the line, "I simply didn't see them," after a horrific traffic accident. I just didn't see them. It's a common, common cause of traffic accidents and incidents. There was a couple recently in Madison where I believe a bicyclist was hit and someone in a crosswalk was hit, and they said they simply didn't see them. Now, because the result of a traffic accident can be fatal, and is serious in a lot of cases, it does make sense that when they enacted the statute and they said clear view through the front windshield, they meant clear view through the front windshield.
Well, let me ask this. If I'm driving westward in the late afternoon and looking into the sun, and I put my visor down a little bit to help shield my eyes. Is that a cause for stopping the vehicle?
Do not believe so, because it's standard equipment, and I believe the administrative code has exceptions for that, similar to the exception for the rearview mirror, which is required equipment for the vehicle. So the statutes have to be read in conjunction with the administrative code from the Department of Transportation and the other statutes concerning traffic violations. And so the state is not submitting that there's not the possibility for the court to determine that the statute is ambiguous. The state is submitting that if the court determines that the statute is unambiguous, then the plain language of the statute would require the reading that there is that any obstruction is a violation of the statute.
I'm going to interrupt you.
Yes.
The reason I asked you how you'd write the opinion is because it was my belief that the goal of the state was to adopt the U.S. Supreme Court Hyten. That was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
But the brief, your original brief, and your reply brief,
mm-hmm.
can be divided into two parts,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
The first part is any obstruction is a violation of the statute.
Correct.
Whether Justice Prosser or anyone else here likes it. We don't make the law. That's the law, right?
Correct.
All right. If you take that position, you never get to Hyten.
That is correct.
Okay. So you get then, and any decision by this court as to Hyten would be advisory, because it's not in the case, right?
Yes.
But the second part of your brief, you deal with Longcore and Brown and Hyten, right?
Correct.
And to me, they're disconnected. Because you don't get to the second part unless you find that the statute is ambiguous or raises a question and doesn't deal with all obstructions.
Correct.
And that's why when I asked you to write the opinion, the first thing you did was find the statute ambiguous. So you could wind up with the bottom line of overturning a Brown and Longcore.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right?
It is.
Okay. So the court can either agree with you on the first part as to whether the statute is ambiguous or unambiguous. You say it's unambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
And if they say they're unambiguous, we never get to Hyten because it's quite clear statute. The officer interpreted it properly. Everybody goes home.
That is correct.
And we got your copy, and thank you very much, of the Rodriguez case, but we only got your dissent. You only supplied us with the dissent. Is that right?
Yeah.
Because the majority opinion is not relevant to this case?
It's not relevant to the, no.
I just wanted to make sure that I was reading it all right.
Yeah. So in Rodriguez, the main question is what can you do after you've stopped an individual? And here the question is what can you do, like what do you need to stop somebody? Mm-hmm. And I attached the dissent in Rodriguez, Justice Thomas's dissent, because he makes it very clear that the distinction between probable cause and reasonable suspicion for a traffic stop is not a distinction based on how you can initiate a stop, but a distinction based on what you can do after the stop was initiated.
And to rely on that distinction would be a mistake because it's ephemeral, right? Too fine a point to even be able to discuss intelligently, if I read them right.
To
make a distinction between reasonable suspicion and probable cause in a traffic stop.
I believe Justice Thomas is arguing that the majority was incorrect in not making that distinction, and that he was making the distinction because it has practical applications to the extension of the stop and what you can do during the stop.
All right. Are there any other questions? Thank you very much. This was not an easy case, counsel. Mr. Walter, representing Mr. Houghton.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Andrew Walter, and I represent Richard Houghton, who asks this court to affirm the Court of Appeals decision, which found there was not probable cause that either of these items obstructed his clear view through the windshield. And there are four main points I'd like to address this morning. But before getting to that, I would like to discuss some of the disagreements I have as far as what the record here says. In particular, first, the size of the air freshener. The state says this was a 6-inch tall and 3-inch wide air freshener. That is not actually correct. The air freshener, the length of the air freshener, including the string that it hung from, was 6 inches to 7 inches below the windshield, according to the officer's testimony. So that's a significant distinction there. Second, the issue of Curry, of the Court of Appeals previously finding that an air freshener did violate the statute, and I think this is where the 6-inch by 3-inch air freshener issue comes in, is that this was not a very large air freshener. The officer in this case testified this was a standard-sized air freshener. The state did not, even though it was its burden of proof, did not define any further what a standard-sized air freshener is. Does that mean it's 3 inches tall, 5 inches tall? We just don't know.
But, counsel, if any obstruction is any obstruction, what difference does it make, whether it's 6 inches by 7 or 6 by 3?
Well, that gets into what is an obstruction. And the state is characterizing that anything that is non-transparent is an obstruction. And that's a fundamental disagreement here. Obstruct means more than an item is just within a driver's field of vision or within the space of a windshield. The plain meaning of obstruct is to make it more difficult. That is the common usage of that term. That's what is found in the dictionaries. That's how the courts have defined that term in other contexts where it's used in other statutes. So obstructing an officer means to make it more difficult for the officer to perform the officer's duties. Obstructing a game warden, similarly, to impede, to hinder in some way. So under that plain meaning of make more difficult, the question isn't, are the objects within the driver's field of vision or are there non-transparent objects within the space of the windshield? The question is, do those objects make it more difficult for the driver to see things through the windshield? And you judge that by their size, by their placement. So an object that is down below the driver's field of vision or far up above or direct sight would not interfere with the driver's ability to see through the windshield. And it depends on the size and the placement. The statute actually says an object so placed or suspended so as to obstruct. The placement is not only how they get the object there, but it's also relevant where it is. An object directly in front of the driver's face is more likely to obstruct than the same size object down in the lower left-hand corner of the windshield. And importantly, I think, is the placement relative to the eyes, because that is what we're talking about, a driver's clear view, and that's what drivers use to view things. So it's because of the understanding that not all objects that are within the space of the windshield make it more difficult for a person to see things through the windshield. That's why we have, as the circuit court said, with some hyperbole, zillions of people driving around with these air fresheners or GPS devices or rosaries and dog tags and all the other kinds of things that we see hanging from people's rearview mirrors, is that people commonly understand that obstruct means more than just there. It means that it has to actually make it more difficult for you to see. So really what the state is trying to do here is create ambiguity where there is none.
Well, if you take your position, then the statute may not be ambiguous to understand, but it's ambiguous to apply. Because you and I may disagree whether the pen that Justice Bradley held up does or doesn't obstruct. I thought the Assistant Attorney General was right, that it obstructed her view of Justice Bradley's face. Justice Bradley had to lower that. So what you got is a statute under your interpretation that is subject to interpretation and application. And then you get into the issue that of reasonable mistake of law or fact. So the officer sees the air freshener, and it's her interpretation that that's obstructing, stops the car, gives the ticket and smells the car and figures there's drugs there and searches. So is it a mistake of fact or law, no mistake at all, when they apply that statute to the freshener, the rosary, I don't care what it is, dog tags?
Well, I think, number one, something that makes this sort of a unique case as far as, especially with cases that involve a vehicle in motion, is that the officer made very detailed observations here before making the stop. He knew the size of the GPS device that he, you know, he testified that he had observed. It was 3 inches by 5 inches. He observed the length of the air freshener. So certainly this statute is open to situations where an officer could say, I just didn't see it well enough. I needed to pull the driver over to see better. But that's not what happened in this case. The officer in this case says, this is what I saw. I believed it was a violation. And so that's where I think, and I don't think, even if the court did adopt Hine, I don't think there's a reasonable mistake of law here. But that's why the mistake of law issue here is relevant, I guess, because if the officer believed that everything within the driver's field of vision is automatically an obstruction, then in our view, we have to address it under the mistake of law doctrine. And there's really two components to that. First, whether this court is going to reverse itself on Brown within the space of a year. And second, whether, if it does so, whether this was a reasonable mistake of law. And, you know, since the court decided Brown less than a year ago, I presume that the court didn't just change its mind on the logic there. So I think the issue here really is there a need for uniformity in this situation to interpret Article 1, Section 11 consistent with the Fourth Amendment as interpreted by the U.S. Supreme Court? And the court has said that the reason that it generally does that is, number one, the language, which obviously hasn't changed since Brown, and number two, to provide uniform standards for police so that there's clear guidance for police on when they can make a stop. And that's what makes this situation so unique, is that Hine doesn't give any guidance to police. Police don't need to adjust their conduct at all based on Hine. Hine tells courts what to do after officers have already made a mistake. So there wouldn't be anything unclear to officers if this court stuck with Brown, because the distinction between Brown and Hine is really irrelevant to the officer in the field.
I really disagree with you. I think that Brown says a mistake of law is not sufficient to support a traffic stop, and Hine says, oh, yes, it is.
Right. It's a significant case. What I'm saying is that it's significant. It's applied by courts, not by police. All they have to do is try to be right.
I see what you're saying. Thank you.
So, and under either standard, that's what they need to try to do. So there's not a different standard for police under the two guidelines. The other reason this court should adhere to its decision in Brown is that Brown is a very clear standard for courts in this state. Brown says if there's a mistake of law and the stop is based on that mistake of law, then the stop is unconstitutional. And a mistake of law is fairly simple to find, as the court explained in Longcore, that if you add up everything the officer suspects and believes and you assume that it's all true and you apply the correct interpretation of the law, if that's not a violation, then that's a mistake of law and the stop is unconstitutional. So that's a simple standard. In contrast, you have Hine, which says an unreasonable mistake of law, which is an ambiguous standard. The only guidance the courts have on that is a concurrence by two justices of the Supreme Court. And then there's the question of, can a reasonable mistake of law support an arrest or a stop under the probable cause standard, or does it just apply to reasonable suspicion stops? And if it does apply to probable cause stops, is there a higher standard for what is a reasonable mistake of law under the probable cause standard than there is under the reasonable suspicion standard? This is all the confusion and litigation that the courts that adopt Hine are going to have to go through. So whereas Brown and actually Longcore, which the courts of this state have been following since 1999, is a very clear standard that hasn't created any problems. To a more substantive reason to reject or to adhere to Brown, it's, as this court said in Brown, it's reasonable to expect the police to know the laws that they enforce. They are, after all, law enforcement officers. And they are given, we give them as a society, this power to take away our freedom. And we let them do that based on their application of these laws. With that great deal of power that we give them, it's reasonable for us to expect that they will do what is necessary to make sure that they understand those laws. And it's important that to note that we're not talking about officers alone. We're talking about the law enforcement system, what we expect of law enforcement generally in Wisconsin. So we expect the Department of Justice to provide training to these officers on substantive law. We expect and demand that the district attorneys do the same types of things, that the police departments who hire these officers and put them on the street with this great deal of power to restrict all of their fellow citizens' liberty, that the police departments do what it takes to make sure those officers understand the law before they go out with that power. As to if this court does reverse Brown, this is not one of what Justice Kagan described as the exceedingly rare case where there's a reasonable mistake of law. The statute is unambiguous. It prohibits only those objects that would make it more difficult for a driver to see things clearly through the windshield. If the officer thought that it prohibited any item in the windshield or any non-transparent item, then that is clearly contrary to what the statute says and to what the common usage of obstruct is. I did want to address Justice Prosser talk. I'm sorry if you have questions.
Could I ask you? I want to get a very clear picture of, you have the rear view mirror, and where is the GPS device?
So the officer describes, we don't really know, because there's a couple of descriptions of where the GPS device is. The officer first testified the GPS device was in the lower left-hand corner of the windshield. Then the judge, Judge Race, asked, was it in the same place that a state-issued sticker would be, which are also required to be in the lower left-hand corner? And he said, no, it's more visible to the driver. I don't remember the exact words, but more visible to the driver than those stickers, although it's a bit confusing because there's not those stickers are just supposed to be in the lower left-hand corner. That's all that it's described there. So if this is in the lower left-hand corner, it would seem to be the same place. And I think that's significant here in that the state had the burden of proof. And so when the circuit court didn't find that, well, I won't say the circuit court certainly didn't reject the state's argument, but it didn't adopt that. That's justified by the fact that there's not the kind of clear facts, and this court has talked in the past about we would like descriptions, measurements, rather than these ambiguous terms of large or whatever. The state didn't do that here. And the other, I think the significant thing, we were talking about placement of the objects. So the GPS device is in the lower left-hand corner of the windshield, visible to the driver, but presumably by being in the lower left-hand corner, it's below the driver's sight, within his field of vision, but below his sight. The air freshener is on the rearview mirror. It hangs 6 to 7 inches from the rearview mirror to the bottom of the air freshener. Some portion of that, some undefined portion of that, is the string. Again, the state didn't clarify that. The air freshener is 3 inches wide, and it's a pine tree air freshener, so anybody who's seen a pine tree or a pine tree air freshener, that's 3 inches at the bottom, it's not 3 inches at the top. So we don't know exactly what the size is, but I think, you know, rearview mirrors are supposed to be about at a driver's eye level. So if it's six or seven inches below that, then both of these objects are below Houghton's line of sight as he's looking out the windshield.
Do you disbelieve the officer's testimony that he saw these things as he was driving toward the vehicle?
I accept them as they were uncontroverted. I can understand why someone would be skeptical that an officer could see it that clearly as the vehicle is coming towards him. But again, we don't know how fast the vehicle could have been going 2 miles an hour for as far as we know from the record. I have to take what the officer says with that at face value. And I think it actually benefits Houghton's case because if the officer, like I said before, if the officer said this car was going by really fast, I couldn't see, there was something that looked to be about where a driver would look out the windshield and it looked to be rather large, that's reasonable suspicion. That he could make a stop and go and see, let me see how big this air freshener is. Let me see, you know, where it is in relationship to this driver's eyes. But he testified to more specific facts. And so that you know, there wasn't anything he didn't see. There was no testimony there that I didn't see this or I didn't see that or I needed to investigate this. It was I saw this, I believed it was a violation, and so I made the stop. I did want to address you, Justice Prosser, you brought up the issue of the license plate. I think, and obviously the state hasn't argued that point, but I do want to clarify that the reason that a mistake of law on the license plate would not be reasonable is because the officer testified, not that, you know, he didn't understand how many license plates Michigan issues or anything like that. He testified that every car in Wisconsin is required to have two license plates regardless of where they're from, regardless of anything. And that is clearly contrary to very clear Wisconsin law that says you have to display the number that you're issued. So that's the distinction here. You know, there are cases where, or at least one case where, you know, an officer says, I presumed it was a Wisconsin vehicle because I didn't see I didn't see the license plate. If we're in Wisconsin, I presumed this was a Wisconsin vehicle and it should have had a front license plate. In this case, the officer actually, as he got behind Houghton, saw the Michigan license plate. So on the issue of whether probable cause is the proper standard, and this is the second of two issues the state is asking this court to reverse itself on, the Court of Appeals was correct that probable cause is the standard for all warrantless seizures other than investigative detentions. There's a reason that we call them investigative detentions. They're investigative by their nature. That holding, the Court of Appeals' application of that standard, is consistent with the Court of Appeals' decision in Longcore, and this court affirmed it, although it was a equally divided court. But it's also consistent with how the court applied those two standards, reasonable suspicion and probable cause, in Popke and in Anagnos, where the court judged what an officer believed was an observed violation of all elements of an offense, judged that under the probable cause standard, and then judged in both cases, indicia of intoxication for a driver under the reasonable suspicion standard. The court should adhere to that precedent. It's recent. Popke was 2009. Anagnos was 2012. It's workable. It's been in place since, again, Longcore in 1999. There's not been any issues with it. I know the state cites particularly the newer case as being hard to distinguish between when each standard applies. Newer is clearly, and the Court of Appeals had that case right. It's whether that's the case where we're talking about an officer assuming that the owner of a car is a driver when he knows that the owner is revoked. Obviously, that's a reasonable suspicion case. The officer has to stop the vehicle to see if his suspicion that the owner is the driver is correct. So there's a suspicion there. Nothing has it's important that the state is asking this court to reverse itself when nothing has changed. It's just basically change your mind. There's nothing indicating it's unworkable. There's no shift in the case law since, you know, like I said, Popke and Anagnos are within the last 6 years. And probable cause is the proper standard for warrantless seizures that are not investigative. Terry specifically said that probable cause is the standard and that the exception for investigative detentions is, in their quotes, for the purposes of investigation. And the court has repeated that in Royer and in several other cases. And like all exceptions under the Fourth Amendment, to the Fourth Amendment standards, those exceptions are all limited to the circumstances that justified the exception in the first place. So it's proper to apply probable cause in this scenario. The state, in asking to expand that, is asking this court to apply a balancing test. And number one, I think it would be inconsistent with Terry and that line of cases to even do that. But if this court does apply the balancing test, the citizens' rights here outweigh, or the citizens' interests outweigh, the law enforcement interests here. For the citizen, a traffic stop is a significant intrusion. For the state, there is nothing accomplished by making a stop just for the purpose of issuing a ticket when you don't even have probable cause. That person is not going to be convicted, and if you're not going to investigate, if it's not an investigative stop, you're never going to determine whether that person was violating the law. So nothing is accomplished other than you've intruded on that person's liberty for no reason. The state says, well, safety. Well, but how does that advance the goal of safety? The person will not be convicted. If the officer tells the person, hey, you shouldn't be doing this, the officer would be saying that without having the facts to support the officer's assertion. So safety is not actually advanced in any way. And in judging the state's interest, we also have to look at the fact that although all traffic laws really have something to do with safety, that concern was not important enough here for the state to make this a criminal offense to violate it, which is what the Supreme Court talked about in the Welsh case.
I have two questions, counsel. One, you have the opportunity to read Rodriguez versus the United States. It came out yesterday.
I have not, Your Honor. I apologize. That was a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. Apologize.
Because I wondered if it really had any effect on this case. Two, how would you write the opinion in this case?
I would write a very simple opinion that says that there was not either probable cause or reasonable suspicion to believe that either of these small and somewhat unknown size items, the GPS size is known, but the air freshener is unknown, and the placement of these items is unknown, and it was the state's burden to do that, to make it known, so there was not probable cause or reasonable suspicion. If that's the opinion, the court doesn't have to address Hine because, well, I'm sorry, the court would still have to say this statute is unambiguous, so regardless of whether we did adopt Hine and reverse ourselves on Brown, it would be an unreasonable mistake of law anyway, and so that's an issue for another day. And because there was neither probable cause or reasonable suspicion, we don't need to address the argument about whether the Court of Appeals was right and whether Longcore should be continue to be followed applying the probable cause standard. I do want to just briefly, and I think I've done it, but I want to be clear that when we talk about our differing interpretations of the statute, we're not arguing that the distinction here is whether an object is within the driver's field of vision immediate or only when a driver looks a certain way. It's would an object make it more difficult for the driver to see things through the windshield? That's it. So with that, unless there are other questions, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I'd like to address 2 points on rebuttal. First, I would like to address the position that whether a mistake of law can be found to be reasonable is dependent upon the officer's interpretation of the law. And the answer to that question is no. That was specifically disclosed within Hyen, that the officer's subjective interpretation of the law has no bearing on the analysis of whether the mistake of law was objectively reasonable. If the court is to adopt Hyen, the question is, based on the observations of the officer, would it be objectively reasonable to believe a violation of the statute occurred, regardless of what the officer thought the statute was? And so that's the inquiry there. And that was the state's argument as to the license plate issue, is that regardless of what the officer thought the statute regarding the front license plate was, that mistake was unreasonable because there is no reading, no objectively reasonable reading of the statute and case law interpreting that statute that would lead an unreasonable officer to believe a violation of that statute had occurred. So if we are to adopt Hyen, that is the analysis that we go through. And that is important because, as counsel pointed out, it does have absolutely no application to officers. It does not. The state will not be training officers about mistakes of law, similar to the fact that we do not train officers about mistakes of fact. And if we were to train officers about mistakes of law, that could potentially make any mistake of law de facto objectively unreasonable. Because if we tell an officer that they have, that they can make a mistake of law and give them incentive not to know the laws, that would be directly contrary to Hyen. So the application of the mistake of law doctrine will have benefits to the bar and to the bench, not to the officers. And it's similar to the probable cause, reasonable suspicion dichotomy, which is my second point on rebuttal. Probable cause and reasonable suspicion is not workable. There is a multitude of cases where the argument has been the standard that should have been applied should be probable cause by the defendant. The state argues reasonable suspicion, and we never really know what the court's going to decide. And this case is the perfect example of that. The counsel agrees that either standard could apply based on to what the officer testified to, which is completely unworkable if we are going to have one standard upon which to judge whether or not evidence should be suppressed. So if it comes down to whether the officer testified, I knew for sure that there was objects placed within the windshield versus I thought maybe there was, so I wanted to check it out, that's not a workable standard. And so reasonable suspicion should be the standard that's applied to the analysis of whether or not a traffic stop was reasonable when it was initiated, because that will allow for a single standard, a consistent application of the law, and one that the state believes is supported by the Fourth Amendment jurisprudence of this court and of the United States Supreme Court. Even in the cases, which the state pointed out in its brief in chief, that distinguish between probable cause and reasonable suspicion, specifically in Brown, the court goes through the probable cause analysis first and then does a reasonable suspicion analysis. It did not end after the probable cause analysis. And it is because of that, because we're doing both the probable cause and reasonable suspicion analysis anyway, if the only question is whether the initial traffic stop was valid, we should just be analyzing it under the reasonable suspicion framework. So it's further consistent with the United States Supreme Court holding that there is always some level of investigative function to a traffic stop. We run the license of the person stopped, we check for warrants, and we ask investigative questions. And even in the context of speeding, if the officer did not know for certain that the individual was speeding, but hadn't had enough facts to reasonably suspect that he was, he could investigate that. He could ask the person, do you know how fast you were going? And if the person says, yes, I was going 55, and the speed limit is 35, then the officer investigated that offense. And with that, we ask that if the court is to adopt that the statute is ambiguous, that it further find that reasonable suspicion should be the standard upon which to judge the stop, and that if the officer was mistaken, his mistake of law was reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. I want to thank, on behalf of the court, both Assistant Attorney General Winter and Defense Counsel Andrew Walter for their arguments today on yet another search, seizure, Terry stop, probable cause, and adding in Brown and Longcore and the U.S. Supreme Court case. And I want to thank Ms. Winter for bringing to the court's attention of the Rodriguez case. That ends our discussion hearing on 2013 AP 1581 CR, State versus Houghton. Justice Prosser will be out to talk with the students, and the court will reconvene at 1:30 to hear its third case. We are in recess.